Welcome, and thank you for joining us today for a discussion on the 2021 tax implications of the COVID-19 pandemic. The last 12 months have seen many changes to all aspects of our lives, and tax has been no exception. Today, we'll explore some of the key areas in tax where we've seen an impact, as well as looking ahead what we might see in terms of future impacts, based on the current attitudes of taxpayers, governments, and tax authorities worldwide. My name is Catherine Hall. I'm head of tax for Mazars in the UK, and I'm delighted to be joined today by two expert panelists, Jisun Choi, European Counsel at Skadden, and Aude Dilashat Patel, head of international corporate tax disputes and tax governance for Mazars. So Jisun, starting with you, if I may, what are some of the more significant changes you've seen in your practice as a result of COVID-19?
There are some obvious changes, of course, to business taxation, one of which in the UK would be no more physical stamping of stock transfer forms or other instruments of transfer for obvious reasons. And that has all changed to an electronic existence. Possible it may stay afterwards. But some of the more significant changes from a substantive perspective as opposed to procedural, we think must have been the impact of company residence, where residence is established in a particular jurisdiction by reference to management, and that management being exercised within a particular location. Taking the UK as an example, as I'm sure many of the people who are viewing this are aware, in the UK, UK company residence can be established by incorporation, so a UK incorporated company, or by reference to central management and control being exercised in the UK. And largely, although there are various factors, of course, that determine what central management and control is, de facto, that central management and control lies with the board of the company that makes strategic decisions. And where those board meetings are held is of crucial importance. And with the impact of travel restrictions that COVID has brought along throughout 2020 and that we're continuing to see in 2021, where companies have had their residence established by way of management or in fact, avoided residence in a particular jurisdiction by ensuring that central management and control is exercised abroad or in elsewhere outside of that particular jurisdiction. That has meant that the impact of COVID has come been of particular importance to companies determining whether they are resident in one jurisdiction or not. Now, the tax authority has put out sympathetic taxpayer guidance suggesting, at least in the UK, that CMC, Central Management and Control, being determined on a case-by-case basis with due regard being given to exceptional facts and circumstances, of which COVID-19, of course, I think we can all acknowledge a global pandemic is one alongside the travel restrictions. That said, it stops short of safe harbours being given to taxpayers to say that during the COVID-19 period, to the extent that you do need to hold board meetings in the UK, we will not treat you as a UK tax resident. And of course, their guidance from HMRC on the other way around, where companies do, in fact, look to assert UK residence in the UK, even though they are incorporated abroad, for instance, in a popular jurisdiction like Jersey, Cayman Islands, or so on, because they may have more flexible corporate governance laws. Has been of acute importance and something that we've been having to advise on more closely as a existing matter in group structures. And there are limited practical steps, of course, that can be implemented. I think by and large, people have been focusing on having to rely on the fact that these are exceptional circumstances. Other taxpayer tax authorities worldwide have given out perhaps more helpful guidance, as has HMRC, for instance, when establishing individuals' residence by reference to the statutory residence test, such as the March to June safe harbour in 2020. But it remains to be seen what impact this will have, perhaps not, but this taxpayers have been paying particular attention to residents from our perspective.
Thanks, Jason. And Aud, if I can turn to you now, how are we seeing things impact on the governance and dispute world?
Thank you, Catherine. To follow from Jean Soon's extremely interesting take on the transactional aspect of things, what we've seen from a dispute angle is indeed the rise of questioning from our client regarding their residency status, their corporate residency status, and their permanent establishment risk. So I think nice time for the business to pause, take stock, and really look at how they have documented their decision-making process during the pandemic. Who has made the decision? Where? Why? And what was the business rationale underlying it? I think it will be crucial to risk assess that corporate residency and any potential permanent establishment risk. The OECD in April, as early as April 2020, has issued an analysis of the tax treaties impacted by COVID-19. In this document, they do state that should the situation, exactly in the same vein as what Jin Soon said, should the situation be solely temporary and exceptional and have no aspect of being quotidian, then a PE is unlikely to have taken place. If there has been some leniency shown by the tax authorities globally, I think that leniency may have stopped. I think it is important that we do look into those issues now, especially because you see, for example, HMRC is issuing updating their international manual or issuing those statements and putting the focus on the importance of residence tiebreaker in double tax treaty. So I think going forward, we can expect more scrutiny on corporate residence issue and permanent establishment issue. And but there's a silver lining. You know, in case of those kind of disputes, there is a remedy. There's a dispute resolution mechanism that have been thought through in the double tax treaty, and especially the double tax treaties that are based on the OECD model, which is the case in the UK. And they include a tiebreaker, a residence tiebreaker. So pre-2017, that tiebreaker was the place of effective management, which slightly differs from the place of central management and control. Post-17, and following from the work of the OECD and the BEPS, and thanks to the multilateral instrument, that tiebreaker has changed to be determined by the competent authority through a mutual agreement procedures. And we are helping more and more clients going through this process. So I think it's important to know that there is a solution, that yes, now it's a bit more formal, as we do have to put an application to the competent authority. But it's important to know that up until the competent authority determine where that corporation is resident, then the taxpayer may only be entitled to the treaty benefit to the extent agreed by those competent authorities. So it's important to keep that in mind. The other aspect we have seen emerge in the controversy world are the transfer pricing, for example. So it will also now be the time for businesses to revisit their transfer pricing documentation and information, as these will be on the radar of the tax authority. Logically, the supply chain, the value chain may have changed in order to permit businesses to continue trading. Some of those changes may have actually brought positive things, but nonetheless, you may see a difference into your business model, and that should be reflected in the correct documentation. I'm thinking about the master file, for example. So in the same line, now is a good time to look at your transfer pricing documentation, including the economic analysis and the benchmark. And finally, another aspect which we can expect to see being more and more of importance for the tax authority is in the UK last week, it has been announced that a taxpayer protection task force was to be formed in order to target the taxpayer that may have defrauded HMRC and the government, especially the CGRS scheme, the coronavirus job retention scheme. So I think the investment would be around £100 million. And they were also talking about having a specialist team of more than 1,000 fraud specialists to tackle that issue. So I think that is to be kept in mind. So then again, so that leads onto the governance aspect. So assisting business to implement and maintain good governance is an integral part of preventing corporate disputes, or actually aiding a smoother dispute resolution process. And I think now more than ever, and the COVID-19 has accelerated that process, corporate will have to achieve an equilibrium between, on the one hand, standing up to scrutiny, which will be ferocious, at least on the area we've touched upon just now. And on the other hand, the need for those corporates to be and be seen as being an integral part of the society, of this recovery. And how do they do this? They do this by demonstrating they're paying their fair share of tax. They're on top of their tax compliance obligation. So I believe that good governance, responsible tax planning, and dispute resolution and prevention will be the key and interdependent element in striking this balance and ultimately reaching for sustainable taxation place. What we also seen, and this has been exacerbated by the pandemic, is the fact that transparency is the new norm in international taxation. There's more reporting obligations, there's more exchange of information, there's more recourse to those exchange of information between tax authorities. Stakeholders, and this is a very wide definition for me, are interested in knowing about the tax affairs of businesses. I'm talking about clients, consumers, investors, employees, boards, and so on and so forth. People are aware of tax, people are knowledgeable about tax, and people want to know more, and they want to make sure that there is some fairness, that everybody is doing their fair share. So for example, I would touch upon tax strategy. So the businesses that do have to publish an annual tax strategy, I would be expecting this year to see details about whether or not they have implemented the CGRS scheme. If they have done so, maybe some of them with hindsight realize they didn't need so much and they've decided to reimburse it. So it's also an element I would be expecting to see in the tax strategy. In the same vein, as we touched upon earlier, I would also be expecting to see something about a change in the value chain or in the supply chain or in the business model as a result of the pandemic. I think it would also be astute for business to take stock and understand what are my tax governance requirements and document and assess, possibly put in place or update a risk register as to what is due when, and do I have the answers to all the questions that may be asked of me, and why is the business have taken the decision they have during the pandemic. I think it's okay not to have the right answer or not to have done the right thing. But the unknown is a position to really try to avoid. So try to understand why we've done what we've done and really communicate openly with your CCM if you have one, with the tax authority that are concerned for such a situation, for example. On the corporate criminal offense front, one may be of the view that the COVID-19 pandemic is actually a trigger to update your risk assessment and potentially review your prevention procedures that you had put in place. And if this year is the year for the business to have an enhanced business risk review, I would encourage them to prepare those meetings thoroughly and going into those meetings with an open mind and in a collaborative manner to discuss with the CCM all the obstacles they may have to face. I do believe the tax authority will respond comprehensively and will show some sympathy in front of transparency.
Thank you, Aud. There's raised some really interesting points there. Just from your perspective, are you seeing an increase in focus on strategy and governance from a transactions perspective?
Yes, all of that certainly plays out in forward planning, of course, as well as existing arrangements that taxpayers may have. So, and Aud mentioned, you know, now is a good time to take stock. And of course, for businesses, there is no better time to take stock than when entering into major acquisitions or major integration or group restructurings from a transactional perspective. What is happening now? We've reviewed that and orders covered the disputes elements of that. But looking forward, if we are going into a revised structure or a new world of an acquisition in a merger of businesses or restructuring some elements of the group, what will work for us? For instance, in any acquisition or investment structure and vehicle, if there is a special one being put in place and cash repatriation considerations as part of is something that, you know, tax lawyers will look very closely at, given withholding and minimizing tax leakage within the group and to its investors. And so if residence in a particular jurisdiction, as we've mentioned before, is a crucial part of it, and whilst it may have been achieved by reference to management and control, if that is no longer possible, or if there are enhanced protocols that businesses and their employees and officers have to go through on a go forward structure in an acquisition or a merger of businesses, whether taxpayers will just go down the certainty route. And certainty is something that I think all businesses are craving at the moment in this. Well, perhaps not just businesses, I think all of us to some extent. So incorporating and establishing residence by reference to incorporation as opposed to management, place of effective management, is one of the key trends that we've been seeing playing out from a strategy and governance perspective, from an acquisition perspective and a transactions perspective. More widely, of course, there are also considerations about not just incorporation. There are certain jurisdictions which require substance in a particular jurisdiction. And of course, Luxembourg being one of the very heavy favourites of many investment structures in investment funds, particularly in the private equity world. Luxembourg is a small city state running out of resources, qualified personnel, and therefore, do we look at alternative jurisdictions? Must we look at a particular Luxembourg structure because it's been tried and tested? But because of COVID, you know, actually, may perhaps the governance structures on a go forward basis won't work for us. And so we need to consider where the employees are actually at and think about what vehicle we use from an acquisition or investment perspective in a place where it's more aligned with where the business folks are on the ground.
Thanks, Justin. That's fantastic. Looking and then a little bit further ahead, well, what are the trends we're seeing emerge in the way that we interact with tax authorities?
I think we see that taxpayers and tax authorities, I realise they need to talk to each other more openly, either when there's an inquiry which starts, information request sent, or on the other hand, when the taxpayer needs more information, more clarity on what it is expected of them. So I would strongly encourage to be as collaborative as possible in your communication with HMRC, and to be as clear and transparent, because I think that will be welcomed. The government has went to great length and invested and injected a lot of money into the economy to keep the economy afloat, to keep the businesses alive. I think this has created momentum to continue those discussions. But on the other hand, the government will also be in a place of needing to replenish their coffers. So should some people not have played by the rules, those people, if found out, will be severely punished. Therefore, scrutiny is unavoidable. Questions are unavoidable. So it's a matter of being prepared and being ready to talk. I think, as Jin Soon rightly said, certainty is gold and it's what the taxpayer are thriving for. And there's a way of attaining certainty in some areas. I'm thinking about the advanced pricing arrangement, for example, in the transfer pricing world. On that, I would add that when I talk about advanced pricing arrangement being an instrument to gain certainty, I'm talking about the bilateral or the multilateral ones. I'm not so much focusing on unilateral APAs anymore. I think those aren't going to be the response to certainty much longer. I think there's also a focus for certainty, which means risk assess locally, globally, the entire supply chain and value chain. That is also an opportunity to know your business better, I think. And in the same vein, you see the initiative, the ICAP. OECD has just published the new handbook in February about the ICAP program, which is a risk assessment and insurance. And it does bring comfort and not the certainty of an APA, but it is a voluntary program where we would be using a targeted use of the CBCR information and some other information that are at the disposition of the tax authorities. It obviously promotes increased transparency and exchange of information. And it also promotes a more efficient use of the resource. So I think it is a program that has a great future, especially for the business that are striving for certainty. In the same vein, we can see the tax authorities talking to one another. And we have seen a rise in joint audits, for example. So then again, going back to the point of risk assessing locally and globally and making sure everything fits, everything is aligned. And if it's not, then stop and look at it and assess. How can we make sure what has happened? How can we align that again? And to go back, then there's a transfer pricing element of it, just exactly as Jin Soon said, make sure the profits follow the substance. Make sure you revisit your functional analysis based on the movement of your people during that year. The country by country reporting and the exchange of information, data is the new oil. The tax authority have now access to a lot of information they didn't have before. And I think they are now starting to use it better, to want to use it better. And the ICAP is one example of those. We also know that the tax authority aren't just exchanging information. They are also gathering, for example, the J5 group, which is gathering together to exchange methodology and method to identify the tax fraud enablers. So I think that's what we see a lot at the moment. And I think that tendency is just going to go in increasing. And so we just have to be prepared for that and get all our ducks in a row and look at what we've done and where we want to go and make sure the business strategy is aligned to that.
Yes, just to add from my perspective in terms of communications or correspondence with tax authorities from a transactional perspective, of course, transactions between third-party taxpayers may not necessarily involve tax authorities at all times, but particularly since COVID times and certainty and uncertainty is a theme that keeps coming up, we see taxpayers engaging in a particular acquisition or investment or restructuring, wanting to see that certainty, so therefore willingly engaging in clearance applications, for instance, even if it isn't a particular statutory clearance that is provided, but considering whether there is worth it in going for a non-statutory clearance in order to obtain HMRC's buy-in that the acquisition is A-OK and aligned with from a business perspective, and we're not expecting uncertainty 2-3 years down the line once tax returns have been filed to reflect the relevant transaction on the taxpayer's forms. And in a similar vein, whether if there is planning around restructuring and what might be most efficient from a tax perspective, tendency to see over disclosure rather than under disclosure of information around the particular transaction to the tax authorities, again, so that we have a little bit more of a buy-in from the tax authority side and correspondence confirming that from a taxpayer's perspective. And we think that trend is probably going to continue as the international tax world is going into a more transparent space as opposed to a dog and cat chase on avoidance schemes from a transaction perspective.
Thanks, Jason. That's really interesting, that connection between those two areas. Jason, are there any other changes that you foresee happening as we look further ahead?
Certainly many others that are perhaps not necessarily a direct result of COVID, but COVID has accelerated, for instance, the change or aligns with the direction of where the tax world was or the business tax world was heading. For, of course, following COVID, there's going to be, from a government perspective, implementation of measures that will have to raise revenue in order to fund the government support that has been given in terms of the furlough scheme in the UK, as well as other business incentives, but also support but there are going also have to be measures that are encouraging of business growth, and if they're at the end of the relevant business strategy, there is a big tax bill at the end. The government is acutely aware that's going to be a hindrance to that growth and economic recovery. So a clear balancing measure. So what I foresee in terms of business taxation, yes, we've had the UK budget announced and it could have gone either way, but there will be a rise in corporation tax rates to 25%, currently 19%, but that won't be until April 2023. So we still have 2 years ahead of us. In terms, will that necessarily stop UK related acquisitions, investments or use of UK structures? I don't think so. Will it necessarily mean that there are going to be more artificial transactions in that 2-year period prior to the tax rate increase. Also not necessarily sure, given that corporation tax, of course, is a tax on profits and there first needs to be some before it's engaged. There's going to, we also think on an international stage, and part of it relates to what Aud has already been seeing in her practice, continued focus on tax avoidance, and clearly that being an additional, you know, revenue raising, having a revenue raising impact, which aligns with also the continued effort in trying to reach global consensus on how we allocate taxing rights between different jurisdictions for large multinational groups, not just in the digital space, but also, of course, Pillar 2 discussions on the OECD level relate to a minimum rate of tax and where that is paid. So possible in the corporate transaction space, it may not have clear impacts. Trends such as establishing residence by way of incorporation to get that certainty are going to continue because resources from an employment perspective and officer perspective on the ground may be limited or curtailed, or we might see a new working environment on a go-forward basis post-COVID. But as part of government's dual initiative to raise revenue but also encourage business growth, we may see large businesses having to deal with different issues such as tax avoidance and allocation of taxing rights between groups, but also but at the same time encouraging small businesses. So as an example, the corporation tax rate in the UK will not rise for certain small businesses. It will just be for those businesses that have profits in excess of a particular amount.
Thank you, Justin. As you say, it's a careful balancing act, isn't it, between protecting the tax base and then recovering the costs that everyone's borne through those incentives. Finally, I'd like to ask both of you, you know, and when you're advising heads of tax or heads of finance, what one key thing, and I know it's hard to narrow it down to one, but what's the one key thing would you say that they should focus on now and over the next 12 months? Or perhaps we could start with you.
I think I may not stick to one, but I think we can see exactly the trend continuing that tax is no longer seen as a pure parity cost. It may be seen as an investment. It is not solely concerned by bringing value to the shareholders only. I think the stakeholders, as we mentioned earlier, are very keen into understanding how businesses see and act in their tax affairs. So I think one of my advice would be keep your eyes on your tax governance obligations. Make sure you are seen as being compliant and playing by the rules. I think businesses maybe hold to a higher standard of accountability. And therefore, they ought to embrace this and really show the community that they are indeed part of this community. I think on the dispute front, scrutiny is upon us. So it's either civis pacem parabellum, so let team who desires peace prepare for war, or even civis pacem para pactum, if you want peace, agree to keep the peace. I think get prepared, get ready.
Thank you, Aud. And Jason, from your perspective?
I think from the key takeaway for businesses from my perspective would be, of course, transparency and certainty was one of the key recurring themes that both Aud and I talked about. But in order to get that business alignment with the tax strategy and taking stock and reviewing, is the information gathering aspect. we cannot take stock if we don't have the relevant information at hand, and businesses may not. There may be disjoints from a tax perspective, from a business perspective, and therefore it is crucial at this point in time, as we're slowly entering into a new world of tax, to gather as much information as you have and obtain access to it, to the extent that there are gaps missing, seek those additional information requests, because you can be sure, as Aud said, that tax authorities will come asking for it. And if the businesses themselves do not have the relevant information at hand, I think that will be a very tricky position to be in.
Thank you. That's fantastic. Well, thank you to both Jason and Aud. It's been a real pleasure to hear your insights. I've enjoyed the discussion immensely, and I hope you have too. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you all again soon.